Good morning. This is Wendy Bauer reading to you from the Decatur Tribune Online and the Decatur Herald and Review. Today is June 15th, 2015. And from Decatur Tribune Online is the City Beat. Good news, Central Park Fountain is alive. The Central Park Fountain came to life Tuesday morning and it looks great, along with the rest of the park. Not having the fountain operational for the past 2 months has been a big disappointment, at least for me and some other people who have called, emailed, or stopped me on the street to complain about it. City employees were working on the fountain Tuesday morning as I was walking through the park, and I was told it should be operational very soon, and about a half hour later I received a call at the newspaper that it was running and looks great. This year's mechanical problems with the fountain, which has always been turned on in April, certainly bothered city employees who have been working to fix the problem and have also heard a lot of negative comments from citizens. I know from the years in my office that a lot of prom, graduation, reunion, and wedding photos are shot using the fountain as background. The fountain is also part of many activities and events that are held in the park, and quite a few people eat lunch there in warm weather and enjoy watching the fountain. The beauty of the fountain comes from the life the water gives it with its bowls, waterfalls, and sprays that shoot into the air. Having some mechanical problems with the operation of the fountain is certainly understandable, and, as I mentioned, no one hated the delay any more than those in charge of getting it operational. This is the 13th year of the new fountain, so considering the volume of water that passes through it each season, there is bound to be some problem from time to time. Hopefully, with this year's problems fixed, in future years mechanical issues can be kept to a minimum and there won't be any delay like there was this year. There is no question that with all the work that has been done in Central Park the past few years, when the fountain isn't operating, the park is less of an attraction than it is with it running. Photos of the fountain running, with the transfer house in the background, are everywhere, including our website, our Facebook page, community organizations, telephone books, and so much more. They probably exist, but I have yet to see a photo of the dry fountain featured prominently in anything. As I mentioned in an earlier column, I really appreciate the paint job the outside wall of the fountain received last month. It really spruced it up, but it needs to be a priority to make sure that it is running 6 months out of the year when visitors are in town and events are being held when the operational fountain is important. I know there have been budget cuts made and departmental shifts have happened in recent years, so that could also be part of the delay in getting the fountain going. But I think the big problem was mechanical. And now from the Osborne Online column, from Paul Osborne, the editor and publisher of the Decatur Tribune Online. Some reasons why newspaper editors get gray hair. After being editor of this newspaper for several decades, my hair has turned from brown to gray. I think the reason is more about the aging process than anything else, although one city councilman told me when I served as mayor that he wanted to add a few gray hairs to my head. I think he was joking. Or was he? Following are a few examples of what could have contributed to the gray hair. And they're probably similar to what most newspaper editors experience on a regular basis. Years ago, a candidate for public office came to the office and was really hot under the collar. This was the conversation, as best as I can remember it. Hot. The way you quoted me was not accurate. You made me look like a fool. Me. I taped the interview as I told you I was doing. I took your quotes from that recorder. Hot. Okay, the quotes were accurate, but they made me look stupid. Me. Did you want me to misquote you to make you look smart? Hot. I'll never let you interview me again. Me. Can I quote you on that? There is not any part of this newspaper that creates more threats to me than the public records section. That's because a few people, when they are charged with an offense, get mad at me when their name appears in the Tribune. What is printed is what we receive from the Macon County Circuit Clerk. The entire list is printed regardless of whose name is on it. The following is a conversation I had with an irate guy that wasn't all that unusual as I remember it. Charged. I always supported you because I thought you were fair, but if you run my arrest in your newspaper, I will never subscribe to the Tribune or advertise with you again. Me. You always told me you supported me because everyone was treated the same in this newspaper. Now, are you saying I should treat you differently and leave out your name? The man's name was printed. He hasn't subscribed or advertised in the newspaper since that time. Most people who call me, wanting their name and charge left out of the public records, are polite after I explain why all names from the Macon County Circuit Clerk's office have to be printed, but a few bring on threats. What has to be the weirdest complaint I've ever received about someone's name being in the public records came from a man who was upset because we had the wrong charge listed. What made it weird was what he was actually charged with was far more serious than the charge we had listed. He insisted a correction be printed with the more serious charge by his name, which was done because it was a correction. I guess he was proud of the charge against him and wanted to make sure everyone knew he was big and bad. Of course, I've only scratched the surface of the challenges in printing a newspaper. There have been countless normal experiences over the years that can, when repeated a thousand times, add a few gray hairs, like someone sending a photo with four people in it, and they have listed the names of either three or five people as being in the photo, or someone calling on Thursday wanting to know if they can still get a news item in the previous day's edition. A countless number of people have sent news items asking that it be included in the next four or five editions of the Decatur Tribune. After the first time, we call that an ad, not a news story. If we ran all the same news items from the week before, we could just print the same paper we printed last week. I get a lot of requests for free ads if I have some extra space in next week's Tribune. I explain that if I printed ads for free, it wouldn't be fair to those who buy ads, and if I made all ads free, as some have suggested, I wouldn't have a newspaper to run any ads. Sometimes people forget that a newspaper is a business that has to show a profit to stay in operation. I don't know if I have more gray hair as a result of being an editor for so many years, but at least I haven't pulled out all of my hair in frustration, and that's a sign I actually enjoy my work, even with all the major and minor daily challenges. I still look forward to every day. It also helps to be both editor and publisher of the Tribune, because I know the publisher will always have the editor's back. The editor of this newspaper thinks exactly like the publisher and looks a lot like him, so I don't have to worry that I will fire myself. Also from this column, don't pity the funky-smelling neighbor. Recently, Jeff D'Alessio of the Champaign News Gazette wrote an article bragging on a report from the U.S. Census Bureau as of July 2014 about Champaign being the fastest-growing city in Illinois, at least among cities with a population of 50,000 or more. There's not anything wrong about promoting such favorable news regarding your community. I'm sure we would be doing the same if Decatur was named first in that category. What upset a number of Decatur people was the reference D'Alessio made about Decatur. Here's the paragraph he wrote about our city. Poor Decatur. Only six U.S. cities have had more residents flee during that same stretch. Lumped into a category with the usual suspects, Detroit, Flint, Gary, our funky-smelling neighbor's population is 2,116 less than it was 5 years ago, falling to 74,010. Decatur City Councilman Patrick McDaniel called D'Alessio's remark about our city rude. McDaniel also fired off a letter to the News Gazette stating, having been born and raised in Decatur, and presently serving as a member of the Decatur City Council, I found the description you gave of Decatur as our funky-smelling neighbor somewhat offensive and showed poor journalistic standards. I can't remember over the years of any of Decatur's local media ever using disapproving adjectives to describe Champaign or any other Central Illinois community. Champaign nor any other community in our country could be as lucky to have what you call funky smells that Decatur may have. Those smells are the smell of money being made from the crops grown on Central Illinois farms and processed in Decatur's many agribusiness industries who have helped put Central Illinois on the world map and made Decatur the agribusiness capital of the world. McDaniel also invited D'Alessio to allow him to give him a personal tour of Decatur, and I might even allow you to take a whiff of Decatur's funky-smelling air and not charge you for it. Decatur City Limitless also responded, not only congratulating Champaign, but also pointing out a few positives about Decatur, including the following. Top 12 Best Illinois Cities for Families. Top 50 Best Cities for Global Trade. Top 50 Safest Cities in Illinois. Our crime rates are lower than Champaign, Bloomington, Peoria, and Springfield. Oh, and that smell? It's the smell of money, corn, and soybean processing plants that feed the world. I know from experience that a lot of columnists try to be clever and include certain expressions to attract attention to what they write. Well, D'Alessio certainly accomplished that goal with what he wrote, at least in Decatur. Also, it seems for a long time some in other communities like to put down Decatur as a really bad place to live. That's too bad and shows a gross misunderstanding of the strengths of our community, and is a slam against the fine people who live here. Many of us have worked very hard and continue to work hard over the years to move Decatur forward, and the going has been tough. But a lot of good things are here, and progress is being made on even greater things, and the enthusiasm and anticipation are growing with each passing day. So no one should pity poor Decatur. We're doing better each day, and the future looks very bright, so the pity should be used for someone else. I will have to confess that I've lived in Decatur for so long that I don't even notice a smell. Maybe that's because I measure Decatur by the strength of our heart and willingness to work hard to succeed, and not what is said by those who judge us by their uppity nose. And now from the Decatur Herald and Review. City Council to hear City Court changes. From Decatur. Changes are coming to the Decatur Administrative Court System. The subject fueled hours of public comments at a Decatur City Council session, May 18th, with council members spending more than an hour in discussion at the following meeting, June 4th. Having heard all of those viewpoints, City Manager Tim Gleason will detail his plans to the Decatur City Council tonight. Gleason plans to make 4 operational changes, none of which require amendments to city code. One change requested by several council members involves lengthening the period of time that property owners are given to fix nuisance violations. Neighborhood inspectors send a courtesy notification letter to the property owner and previously had given them 4 days from the day the letter was mailed to fix the problem before a citation was ordered. Gleason said that period has been lengthened to 4 business days. It just seems reasonable, he said. That change is effective immediately. He hopes to implement the other 3 in July. They include a database accessible on the city's website showing violations recorded by neighborhood inspectors, a voluntary landlord registration system that will be linked to water billing records, and an alternative consequence for first-time offenders. Most property violations result in a $150 citation. Those found guilty in administrative court also face $140 in court costs, although it is possible to avoid a court appearance by correcting the violation and paying the fine. Gleason said city staff had discussed an alternative for first-time offenders months before the study session. It will be an educational component, similar to traffic school, that will be available on evenings and Saturdays, he said. Gleason said he hopes to examine the court again next spring. There are some other things that obviously I heard, but I'm not ready to take action on them, and don't know that I will, he said. I guess I've been on the job not even 3 months yet, and I don't want to make a knee-jerk reaction. I want to learn for myself and see for myself, and if there are changes down the road that need to be made, there will be. Also from local news, city officials consider residency requirements. From Decatur, they repair its streets, monitor its water, protect its residents, and rush into its burning buildings. But nearly half of employees for the city of Decatur do not live within its boundaries. There are 470 full-time employees for the city of Decatur, with 21 positions unfilled. Assistant City Manager Jerry Bauer said, "Of those, 225 live outside the corporate boundaries of the city, though many reside in Macon County." Those numbers bother residents Jim Taylor and Lloyd Holman, who submitted a suggested resolution to the Decatur City Council during its June 1st meeting. They'd like to see council require all new hires to live within city boundaries. Taylor and Holman point to factors that weigh heavily on city leaders: declining population, rising pension contributions, and a slew of vacant houses marring Decatur neighborhoods. Property taxes pay for the pensions of those city employees, they argue. Isn't it only fair that the employees contribute too? They don't have a vested interest in this community, Holman said in an interview last week. They don't want to send their kids to our schools. It's a downward spiral, it's the bottom line. City Councilman Jerry Dawson agreed and has been raising the issue of residency requirements for years. While Dawson, a former Macon County sheriff, believes that police and fire personnel care about the city no matter where they live, he'd still like to see them move in. "I don't fault somebody for wanting to live out in the country, but when we're paying for their benefit package out of property taxes and they're not helping to pay the city's portion, I just have a problem with that," he said. But it's not as simple as making changes to city code. Residency requirements are spelled out in union contracts for the police, fire, and American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employee Workers. Change would need to come through negotiation. Ask Me employees must live in Macon County or within 15 miles of the city limits. Fire Service employees, hired after May 1, 2010, are required to live in Macon County. Employees hired before that time are grandfathered into an older provision that allows them to live within 40 miles of Decatur. Police officers hired before May 1, 2013 also can live within 40 miles of the city. Those hired after that date must live in Macon County or within the corporate limits of any town with boundaries in Macon County. Union leaders say that their members like having flexibility about where they make their homes. They might want to split the difference of travel time with a spouse who works in another city, for example. "Everybody likes having choices. People don't like to be told where they have to live," said Todd Klein, president of the Police Benevolent and Protective Association Labor Committee, Unit 39. "It's a personal preference, I guess, for everybody." City manager Tim Gleason has been on the job just 3 months, but said the topic of residency requirements has already come up in conversations with Bauer and the police and fire chiefs. While those talks are preliminary, Gleason said he would like to create incentives for workers living in Decatur. For instance, what if the city allowed police officers who lived in the city to take home their own squad cars? While the upfront cost would be greater, the vehicle would enjoy a longer life, being driven less frequently by one officer who would treat it with pride. Gleason said those ideas are in early development stages. He doesn't know what form the measures might take for other city workers, but he hopes to produce changes in the next few years. I think it's likely that we will come up with some sort of incentive to live within the Decatur city limits, he said. Now, how many people take advantage of the incentive, that obviously is yet to be determined. Gleason himself, the city clerk, and the department directors are required to live within the corporate boundaries, according to administrative policy. Other employees not represented by a union can live anywhere in Macon County or within 15 miles of the city border, the same as Ask Me represented employees. Gleason could change the policy for non-represented employees, but he doesn't think it's fair to make them abide by different standards than those who have a contract. If I'm going to come up with this incentive idea, and while it might be unique to each group of employees, I would want to come up with an incentive for everyone as opposed to just saying, you shall, just because I can, he said. In interviews recently, city council members generally expressed support for the idea of negotiating to keep new hires living in Decatur. I believe it would strengthen our economy and strengthen our schools and strengthen our tax base, Councilman Bill Faber said. But many of those who said they liked the idea questioned whether it was feasible. Councilwoman Julie Moore Wolf said the topic often comes in closed session council discussions related to contract negotiations. She said strict residency requirements can make recruiting difficult. While some families want to live elsewhere because of one spouse's job, others might choose adjacent towns for different reasons. For instance, she said the city is full of beautiful neighborhoods, but not many are new. A lot of people are not into maintenance. They just want a brand new neighborhood, a brand new house. I'm not sure we have a lot to offer, she said. Mayor Mike McElroy said police officers in the past have said they do not want to live in the city because of concern for the safety of their children and families. I would prefer that they live in this community, yes, McElroy said, but I also have to take into consideration that as a parent myself, the safety to my child would have to be paramount in any decision that I'd make. Dawson pointed out that there are areas in Decatur where children would attend different school districts if that is a concern. Police contract negotiations began in February. Gleason said he could not discuss details of the ongoing talks. The contract for Ask Me employees expires in 2017. Jared Morstadter, president of Local 268, estimated that only about a dozen of the roughly 125 general service workers represented by the union live outside of Decatur. He said he thought the majority of members would be open to narrowing the residency requirements, though they would like to remain on equal footing with the police and fire unions. The contract for Decatur Firefighters Local 505 expires in 2016. Its president, John Boletta, said the union is always willing to talk about any issues the city wants to discuss. We would just have to see what they bring to the table, he said. Also from local news, Pet Palate Pleasers, an article from Newman. If the magnificent steed American Pharaoh had gotten his champion choppers around a magic mint horse treat, he might have run away with that Triple Crown victory even faster. Horses will do pretty much anything for a magic mint, even letting Mike Finn hammer nails into their hooves. Finn, who lives in Newman, is a farrier and drives those nails with the gentle weight of 35 years' experience. But some horses he meets for the first time can turn themselves into 1,200 pounds of instant skittishness when clapping eyes on a new guy with designs on their feet, especially if they'd had a bad shoeing experience in the hands of someone less skilled. You look at that horse and you can tell they are scared to death, says Finn, 62. But you get one magic mint out and put it into their mouth, and that horse is your friend forever. When they see me coming next time, they come to the stable door. The culinary expert responsible for this equine ambrosia is his wife, Marilyn, who says horses have a big thing for mint. She mixes fresh mint with rolled oats, fresh apples, brown rice flour, molasses, brown sugar, olive oil, peppermint flavoring, lemon juice, and xanthan gum. And voila, a magic mint horse cookie fit for an American pharaoh. Marilyn Finn doesn't stop there. A quick gallop through the brochure for her High Five Pet Treats business lists another horse treat and 8 delights for dogs. Canine taste buds feel the love with a range of cookie-like treats, including LOLs, love of liver, OTs, over-the-top peanut butter, and Piggly Wigglies. And the ingredient list for those Piggly Wiggly goodies is emblematic of all the Finn creations. Oat flour, rolled oats, goat's milk, cooked bacon, eggs, coconut oil, molasses, flaxseed, cheddar cheese powder, smoked flavor, cream of tartar, and Worcestershire sauce. She spent 25 years in the bipedal side of food service, working as a food service director in hospitals. She learned how to cook to exacting standards and, always tending to canter toward adventure, likes experimentation. So when she found herself at home raising a daughter 15 years ago, she looked around for a gastronomic venture that could feed her bank account a little cash. We had 4 dogs then, and I would whip them up little treats, usually human recipes, explained Finn, who used to keep horses too. And I would see how I could change this or that to make it good for the animals. Cooking is chemistry, and when you change the ingredients, you are changing the chemistry. Friends began to ask for the treats for their own pets, and momentum built from there. With her husband out every day making horse house calls, frequently to places that had pet dogs as well, he became the perfect traveling salesman. Once people have seen their animals try them, you don't have to sell them anything. The treats sell themselves, he says. Why is my wife so good at this? Because she is a perfectionist who believes in quality and all her stuff is tested and done right. That pretty much sums it up. She also has 5 dogs at home these days, hence High Five, who have become the perfect dry run audience for canine treats that look like everything from miniature hamburgers to sports team logos and even faux cupcakes. Displaying more than a little horse sense, Marilyn Finn explains that dogs don't much care what the treats look like, but then again, dogs aren't the ones ponying up the bucks. No, the looks are for the owners, she says. People eat and buy with their eyes. She's not horsing around. Finn is well aware some pet owners find her treats so irresistible they've been known to munch a few surreptitiously themselves. And if the proof is in the pudding, if it's an essential truth that's not been lost on the cook either. I've tried the horse treats, which are sweet and hard as a rock, she adds. But these cheese treats, referring to her easy cheese dog treats, are pretty darn good. And that's it for our first half hour. This is Wendy Bauer. I will be returning in a few minutes with our second half hour from the Decatur Herald and Review.